Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the advice podcast where two best friends and TV writers separated by 3,000 miles get together to ask each other questions in a virtuous effort to make money off podcasts. I am your host, author, it's not TV writer, fisherman, ordained minister in the Universal Life Church, Daniel O'Brien, and this is what I sound like, and I'm joined by my co-host, Soren Bowie. Soren, what do you sound like?
Kind of like this.
Oh.
Occasionally I get pretty excited and I do a little of this, and then other times I'm a little bored and I do get real low.
Like you this. Get bored during this podcast?
Yeah, I mean occasionally, but that's okay. Not usually. I mean, if I get bored, I just start talking, and that's sort of how I live my life.
Yeah. Right, because you assume if you're bored, then everyone else is bored, and
yes.
Someone's got to entertain them.
Somebody isn't pulling their weight, and now I need to speak. This podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare premium membership for free at skillshare.com/QQ.
As stated, this is Quick Question, and we are Soren and Daniel, and you, our loyal listeners, prefer to be called Quick Foley, a.k.a. Dan Kind, a.k.a. Booed Love. Now, Soren, is that a reference that you get?
Did you say Quick Foley?
Yeah.
Is that Nick Fury? No.
Nope. There's a New York Times bestselling author slash professional wrestler. His name is Mick Foley. And he sometimes wrestled as Cactus Jack and Dude Love and Mankind. And then sometimes also just as Mick Foley. And So that's why Quick, the first portmanteau was Quick Question with Mick Foley. So Quick Foley. Uh-huh. And then Dan Kind was Mankind plus Mankind. Daniel. And then Booed Love was Dude Love plus Bowie.
That's great.
And I did nothing with Cactus Jack.
I mean, that could have been one we save for when we ever do like a crossover over episode with Zeitgeist, but you know, you got to use the ones you've got.
I guess. I mean,
you burn them as you get them.
Again, it's not me. This is what our audience prefers to be called.
That's true. It's the will of the wisp. Yes. I'm thinking maybe my supporters maybe want to be called boosters. Does that sound right?
To me? No.
Yeah. Like football boosters, you know?
Boosters, what do you mean football boosters?
Well, boosters, they're the people who support the team.
In high school, boosters would buy ads in the playbills for our school plays.
Yes. Yeah, people who sort of like lucratively support local high school football.
Oh, they did it for sports too?
Yeah.
That's less exciting. They don't need that.
Did you never watch the show Friday Night Lights? It's big on boosters.
Oh, that's right. Fucking, what's his nuts? What's
the car salesman.
Yeah, Buddy Garrity. Yeah.
Buddy Lyle's dead.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry. So, yeah.
Can you hear dogs screaming in the background again, as usual?
A little, yeah. But okay. I think it's usable. I should warn you that at some point, maybe in this podcast or the next, you will... I hear my child come home.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Where is he?
He went out to dinner.
Oh, that's fun.
Got a date.
Before that, let's get into the show. We are so thankful that we're supported on Patreon by our patrons, one of whom, Jamie B., has submitted a question for us to answer. As everyone knows, every month we answer one question from one of our patrons, and Bacon's not here to tell me if that's true or not. So we're just going to go with it. And his question was... Has there ever been an idea or pitch that wasn't used in your shows or videos that you stand by to this day? That's a really...
Yes.
It's a tough question to answer because it was like, hey, did you ever pitch a thing that you thought was funny and no one agreed? And I was like, yeah, thousands. But there's one... I have a thing that I stand by and believe in that never connects. I've done... short and long versions of it in stand-up and conversation, and it never reaches anyone. And the core of it is, remember when we used to make names like that? Like I would be telling a story like, oh, in high school, I went on a date with a girl named Sarah McCarthy. Remember when we used to make names like that? And then I would just continue the story. And at the heart of the joke is something I'm obsessed with, which is the names of people from childhood. anytime anyone tells me a story from their childhood using a kid's full name, it's always like, I was playing wall ball with Billy Jenkins. And I'm like, ah, yes, little Billy Jenkins, back when people were named things like that.
Yeah.
And I never meant it as a commentary on like, oh, everyone today is named like Khaleesi or Brooklyn or whatever. It's not about modern trend names. That's like a tired, hacky idea. It's there's something about hearing someone telling a story that's like, it was me and Joe Jennings and Darren DeCostanzi. And I think, oh yeah. And then they just stopped making Darren DeCostanzis after that. Like both yeah. names were discontinued. And it's an idea I'm certain is true, but I can never get anyone on board with.
Where are the Gary Littells of yesteryear? Right.
I was worried this wouldn't even be relevant to you because
no, I get it.
All of your childhood friends have absurd names and you yourself are named Soren. If
that's true. Yeah, there's, I do have some, I mean, of course you remember the names of every single kid who was in your second grade class for whatever yes. reason. Like that information will never leave you. It's part of your hard drive. But
right.
names like Larry Domingo and like, I will know these kids, Jason Norris, like mm-hmm. These people will stick in my mind forever. And when other people tell stories and they say a name, you're absolutely right. It immediately, it fits. I'm like, yeah, that's a real name.
Yeah.
There's no way that's a fake name.
And a name that we don't make anymore.
Yeah, that does. It does feel that way. Yes.
Like I had a teacher, Mrs. Cahill, and then we stopped making Mrs. Cahills forever. She could only exist in a very specific period of time in the early 90s, and then no more.
That's even more bizarre because it's a last name. Surely yeah. there are more Cahills along the
no,
way.
No, that was it.
Yeah, I think maybe it was in a Mike Sachs book, but he talks about how there was somebody who was doing an interview and they said, when I read scripts from people, I want to read the thing that only you think is funny.
And oh, that's, they request that in the Conan O'Brien packet.
That's
like,
right.
It's like pitch monologue jokes, pitch a sketch, pitch something that has like a segment that has been done on the show before. But you're going to like pitch a version of that and also submit your favorite thing that no one else thinks is funny.
That's such a good idea for somebody to do. If you're looking for a writer to be like, I want to see the weirdest that you get.
Yeah.
I want to see the thing that only you think is funny. Cause you'll see that if you know comedy or you know writing, you can see the kernel of it in there and you can see the potential of it, even if it's not necessarily an idea that you jive with.
Yeah.
And it also is a really great way to root out people who think they're edgelords and are going to write something about
absolutely.
How we're all being too sensitive these days.
You're right.
Speaking of that, do you know what I'm about to talk about?
I do, but do it anyway.
Okay.
Here's some rope, in fact.
So keep in mind that this is like 2008. We actually made this. It got to the point where it's an animated. I wanted to do a whole series. We did a one-off sketch. It's fully animated. And at the last second, I pulled the plug because I was like, this has gotten too racist. Mm-hmm. Oh, it sounds so awful to even say that. All right,
it really does.
Okay.
And
so,
like, I wanted to make a joke about, I wanted to throw out like a goofy fake title for what it would be. But,
yeah.
But the real premise is racist enough. So I'm just going to let you go.
Okay. So it was a series I wanted to do called Dead Ghost Fighters Club. And the premise was that Christopher Columbus and Henry Morton Stanley and Andrew Jackson,
yes.
the ghosts of all of these people, were part of
who Stanley is, if you don't mind.
Oh, because Henry Morton Stanley.
I learned about him from you.
Yeah, he was, I mean, Heart of Darkness is based around somebody like him. He's somebody who's part of the ivory trade in Africa. And yeah, I think it was in Africa. And he was heavily involved in like the oppression of locals in the same way that Andrew Jackson is famous for and the same way that Christopher Columbus is famous for.
And right. So certainly like I could connect a few dots when you're like, this is about Andrew Jackson and Christopher Columbus and this other guy. And I was like, I bet that other guy's not great.
And so they are ghosts, but they're also part of a Ghost Fighters Club. So they're like the Ghostbusters. People call them when they have a problem. But they only solve poltergeist ghosts problems
mm-hmm.
because they're even in the afterlife, they hate indigenous people so much that those are the people they're focusing on. And in my mind, I was like, oh, that's funny. And then in writing it out, I was like, ooh, this is a tough line to walk. And as I did it, other people had ideas that they jumped in with and there it started to get like the it no longer became a joke on those three being awful. It became a joke. Every single joke was predicated on saying something else about Trail of Tears and things like that. And I watched at the end, and I was like, this can't live in the world. We have to kill it. That said, I think the original premise of those three as ghost hunters, as ghosts, mm-hmm. was a funny idea. And I guess I'm saying I'm standing by that.
I mean, you are standing by it. Like, that was the... You can't premise, walk it back now. That was the premise of this question. What do you still believe in, Soren?
I just... There were elements of it that I really liked, and writing them was very fun. Writing a bunch of guys who are also reckless because they're already dead. They don't care. And it never goes right.
The audience is not rooting for them, which is the...
No, of course not. Things go wrong for them constantly. It's like Andrew Jackson is showing up to the fight, taking off his backpack and being like, a good thing I brought my secret weapon, reaching into his backpack and only coming out with now his hands and fists.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff was so much fun to write.
It's good stuff. And it was, what's the right word? I want to say funny, but I also don't want to get canceled. But it is funny that their motivation for ridding the world of ghosts was still like rooted in racism and not a genuine desire to get rid of ghosts. Like, in the treatments that you put together, I don't think we met a white ghost, but
no, we never did.
There's a lot of room for comedy if they ever did, because that's a real question for Andrew Jackson.
Yeah. Whether they'd actually do it or not,
right.
Whether they'd help out in the situation. Yeah. It was, I don't know, it was really fun to write the first time around. And then it just continued to evolve, as projects do, where you kind of get lost in the trees a little bit. And it's hard to look at, it's hard to see the entire picture. And then I watched it at the end and I was like, this can't live. I think we have to not ever do this.
I suppose just so you're not alone there under the bus, that similarly, I feel the same way about time-traveling pedophiles.
Oh my god, time-traveling pedophiles.
That I've always wanted to do, about three guys who learn the secret of time travel, and all they want to do is go back in time and have sex with famous historical figures when they are young, when they're illegally young, specifically.
Yes, but
not like hinges. not even like Helen of Troy at peak Helen of Troy. It was like, no, we don't want that. We want to go back to like 13-year-old Helen of Troy. And they go back in time for whatever their mission is, which is always to have sex with a child, and then realize when they get back there that something else has happened that would upset the time-space continuum. And before they can have sex with the person they want to have sex with, they have to undo this thing that was done so they can preserve the timeline. And they do that, and
then they run out of time.
And then they run out of time. And it's like, oh, fuck, I was supposed to have sex with Anne Frank tonight, but I can't. Because I spent all that time doing this other thing, and that's why we have penicillin today. All right, I guess we'll try again tomorrow. Like, it was never, the goal was not to root for them to achieve what they wanted, because it's not fun or interesting to me to make a show about successful pedophiles. But it was funny to make an audience vaguely root for pedophiles in this other direction.
No, I mean, I've always still that's think like it's my funny, wheelhouse.
But I'm never gonna pitch it to anyone else. Like, because I have to start with like, I'm not behind pedophilia. It's terrifying and tragic, and I understand that. But it's vaguely funny if the person that you happen to be rooting for in this case is a pedophile. Like, you need this pedophile to be the one who stops Hitler.
Right. So I mean, these shows are
pedophile go, which is a terrible sentence to utter.
These shows are built around the same. I mean, like the same button. It scratches the same itch, which is terrible people doing the right thing for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Which is always, it's always very, very funny to me. Like, I always love it.
Yeah.
As soon as I land on something like that, my first instinct is always like, yo, we're making it. We're doing it. And of course, we can't make a show called Time Traveling Pedophiles.
Right. In the writing of it, when you want to write a character who is sad because even though he saved the day, he didn't get to sexually assault a minor. It's like, no, I don't think I should be doing this. I don't think I should put this out into the world. I don't want anyone sympathizing with this guy.
Right. As soon as you like start to get into the nitty gritty of writing the dialogue and somebody has to say something about wanting to have sex with a kid, you immediately are like, oh, I don't know how to write this. There's no way to make this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like, even if I did know how to write it, I wouldn't do it. Like, even if I woke up one day and was like, I figured out the way to do this in like a balanced, sensitive way, I still think like, do we really need someone to crack that code? Do we need someone to figure out this particular puzzle? No.
Yeah, certainly not now. Times have changed an awful lot since we began comedy. Also, we've grown up quite a bit since we started comedy. I think more so the latter. Yeah. We just became more aware of the world than we used to be.
Right.
But those shows aren't going to work. But thank God we never did them, huh?
Yeah. That's very, very good. Thank you, Jamie B, for the question and for being a supporter. You can all support us on Patreon by, I guess, Googling Quick Question Soren and Daniel Patreon, probably.
I mean, sure, you could do it that way. Or I could just tell you that it's Patreon/QuickQuestion.
.com. There's not a dot. Where's the .com?
Sorry.
Jesus.
I had one of those sicknesses recently where I got a fever and everything, and I thought for sure this was the end. Mm-hmm. I was lying in a bed. It was the bed was drenched in sweat. I was I thought this is the end for me. I can hear my breath wheezing, and I'm so hot that I feel like I'm going to explode. And then I took my temperature, 100 degrees. Nothing. Barely a fever at all.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
Yeah, but people get up to 104 and they're fine. Their brains aren't cooking till like 105. And I thought for sure I was doing permanent damage to myself. And it turns out I'm just a baby.
Wow. All right. Before we go any further with the podcast, we do want to thank our sponsor, Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community where millions come together to take the next step in their creative journey with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people on topics including illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, and more. I've mentioned it in the past that I took a music theory Skillshare class and I took an introduction to sign language Skillshare class. I found them both very helpful. Most recently, I've been trying to learn close-up card hand magic, like magic card tricks.
Are you really?
And yeah, because I, even before I had 6 nieces and nephews, I've always like had very strong fun uncle energy, and I feel like I need to steer into that and just like finally learn some magic. And the class that I'm taking, which is taught by a person named Daniel Platt, it's not only very helpful teaching me tricks that I will one day master, but he's like an incredibly relaxing speaker. It's just like a very enjoyable class to take, even if you don't want, even if you don't want to learn magic and you just want to hear someone talk. This is the video for you. Is Daniel Platt teaching you magic? But you don't just have to learn about magic, although why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't it be great if we all knew a little magic? Skillshare is an online community that offers membership with meaning. There's so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives. Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. They offer classes designed for real life so you can move your creative journey forward without putting life on hold. You can learn and grow with short classes that fit your busy routine, which is great for me because I have a wild routine that I don't always know exactly what my schedule is going to be. So the fact that I can pull up a video teaching me card magic tricks at 7 in the morning or 11 at night or somewhere in between is really helpful for me. And it's insane that the same service that is teaching me magic and sign language and music theory is so insanely affordable. Especially compared to pricey like in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than $10 a month. Can you believe that, Soren?
I'm gasping. Sorry.
Skillshare is a proud sponsor of Quick Question. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/QQ and get 2 free months of premium membership. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to Skillshare.com/QQ. That's Skillshare.com/QQ Once more, that's Skillshare.com/QQ. Hey, Soren, quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Should we talk about crack.com for a little bit?
I don't think that there would be a better time than to talk about it right now.
It's so, crack.com is a show that Soren, a website that Soren and I used to write for many years. And they've gone through a lot of changes. Most recently, there was the sudden and unceremonious firing of Robert Brockway, an editor who had been there for well over 10 years that both of us had worked with for a very long time and is one of the most skilled writers and editors I've ever met or worked with in my entire life. And shortly thereafter, this comes at the tail end of like 3 years of layoffs and firings of very talented people as the industry shifted. And then shortly thereafter, Brockway's unceremonious exit, longtime editor Jason Pargin, who writes as David Wong, stepped down willingly on purpose and has moved on to a life of, Soren, correct me if I'm wrong, crime fighting? Crime causing.
Well, I guess it depends on your moral code.
Okay.
That's yeah, fair. Either one of those is fair.
I think I say this knowing that there are still hardworking and talented people who work at Cracked and are doing good work there and want to do good work and want nothing but the best for the site. I do still think it's fair to say that it is the end of an era, which doesn't necessarily mean that things will be worse, just that things will be different. Like I can't think of a better time to say that we are in a new chapter of Cracked now than saying it after Robert and Jason leaving.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, of course, because the way that I see it, I came into Cracked, it was already a bus going 60 miles an hour. It was great. I didn't have to do really any work to get it going. It was already going, and all I had to do was keep it moving.
Yeah, that's the theme of Speed. The bus is going 60 miles an hour, and it's great.
And things are happy. Everyone's really excited. There are some people who definitely had to get the ball rolling off the bat, and that was not an easy task because it's like building the voice and everything of the site and the structure of how to get a pipeline of writers coming through. And those people were Jack and you and Jason. And I would put Brockway in there as well. Brockway is responsible, quietly responsible for some of the very best articles on Crack that his name is not on.
Absolutely.
Articles that they came in through the workshop. People pitched them. They were bad ideas. And Robert said, yeah, but what, this would be a really good idea. So they gave that back to the writer. The writer wrote it. And then it came back in and Robert said, okay. And then deleted everything and then rewrote it as the article that he wanted. And it would do 10 million views in a month.
And his name is not on the byline for that.
His name will never be there. People got jobs based on those articles because mm-hmm. their names were on the bylines at other places. They went to college institutions. They went to institutions of higher learning to talk about superheroes or whatever their area of expertise is. You can't tell, but I'm doing air quotes. And it was really Brockway the whole time. Brockway was the one who saved all of those articles and made the site. As he's the one that brought a lot of eyeballs to Cracked.
Yes, correct. And
so with losing him and losing Jason, I would say that's the end of an era because that's the last vestige of this original crew that helped build this site. And it's going to be something else entirely now. I mean, it has been something else entirely for a little while now,
right.
But there were still, you still had Jason and Brockway there, which felt like, oh, well, they'll keep it going. They'll right. keep it all going. And now that they're gone, it's like, well, I don't know what this site is anymore.
It does very much feel like a pivot to something else that will employ a lot of people and be successful, which is nice. I'm very excited that the brand will continue and people will still be able to make money and have jobs and have a living on the internet working for a comedy website. But it just doesn't feel like the thing that it was before anymore. And I struggle a lot to like square how I feel about that, I guess, because Cracked is not alone in this. Funny or Die was losing employees by the hundreds for the last couple of years. College Humor just lost over 100 employees, I think like 5 months ago. Onion lost tons of employees over the last 5 years. Clickhole was sold to Cards Against Humanity. It's just like the online comedy landscape has changed so much over the last 15 years that I feel like I want to talk about it, but I don't even know what I want to say really, because like, I'm so thankful that you and I got to live through this very strange 10-year comedy boom where you were paid enough money that you could live to write comedy and learn as a 20-something how to make sketch comedy and how to make movies and videos and acquire a bunch of skills in a safe place with a lot of cushioning around you so you could eventually work somewhere else, transition to somewhere else, and whether that's writing books or TVs or movies or whatever. You get to learn while doing, while being paid, because it's I think comedy is a job where it's impossible to not learn while being paid in some way or being financially successful in another category. And while I'm so thankful that we got to live through that period, I'm annoyed that I don't get to be mad at anyone, because we're not owed that. We were lucky that this happened for us. And I want that for kids in the future. I want that for next year's 20 and 21 and 22 year olds. I want them to have the warm environment that we had at Cracked, where it was like, here's a bunch of money, figure it out. You know, there are no adults, just go and figure it out and learn while doing. I want that for them, and I just don't know where they're going to find it.
Yeah, I have a lot of
emotions. That was rambling. I'm emotional about this. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I was trying to figure out my own thoughts on it while you're talking too. And naturally, I don't listen to you, and I just think about what I'm going to say next.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, it's a new haircut.
And I do. It's hard to talk about because I do. I'll start to get mad a little bit when I do. And you're right that there's not one single person to be mad at. A lot of people have their narrative in their head of like how it happened that not just Cracked, but that all these comedy websites basically stopped being able to monetize in any capacity or in a way that could support a staff. And it felt like it all happened kind of at once. It was just this weird cascade. And I don't think that some people will tell you, no, it was Facebook. Facebook is the problem. Or some people will be like, no, it's people using ad blocker. No, it's the advertisers themselves who ruined it. With like weird amalgamous branded content that you couldn't actually tell if it was branded or not. And a lot of that's boring and a lot of that's wrong. And I think that there were a lot of reasons why it happened. And because of that, there isn't one person that I can just be like, you ruined everything.
Right.
You ruined it all. And I want that really badly because you're absolutely right. Like we were so lucky. We were so lucky to have an opportunity like that where we were allowed to kind of, the warden wasn't looking. We were allowed to do what we wanted. And even with our weekly columns, which I know that you and I stressed out about every single week, Sean Baby, Brockway, like those people, they worked on those so, so hard every week. And it was an incredible source of stress because it was a weekly column. You wanted it to be good. It had your name at the top. And you want it to be really, really good content. And so you would freak out all week about it while doing the rest of your job.
It was never pleasant writing a column. It has never been an enjoyable experience.
No. And I'm so glad, though, that I had the opportunity because it forced you to write every single week. It forced you to write something that you thought was good enough to publish every single week. And it made me set, you can, I mean, if you wanted to go back through all of our writings, you could go from the beginning to the end and you could see the transition of people who don't know how to write become people who do.
Yeah.
And don't know structure and don't even know jokes necessarily start to figure that stuff out just through practice. And and people paid us to do it. And I don't see that ever happening again.
Right. I have some. The optimist in me has faith that the kids will figure out their own path and probably already have, because when we were doing Cracked didn't exist before that. Like there wasn't a pipeline for people just out of college to write comedy, fail at writing comedy, get better at writing comedy, and also receive healthcare. That just wasn't a thing that existed. So the fact that I don't know what the new thing is doesn't mean that it won't happen. It just means that I don't know what it is. I guess I'm I'm having faith that someone else knows where weird, funny 22-year-olds can go to learn how to make jokes.
Yeah, it's gonna be something like TikTok or like a thing I don't understand.
Yeah,
I'm sure of it. It won't be the same because you can't do a sketch in that capacity. I'm sure there are people who want to do sketch comedy now in their lives. And right. It was such an easy trick. You saw that when you were young in Kids in the Hall or Mr. Show or Saturday Night Live. And you're like, yes, that's a cool format. I want to do that. And then we got to do that. And it's much harder now when you're just sort of inventing a format.
Right. And I think some folks are, I think the front facing iPhone videos that are 2.5 minutes long that are going up on Twitter that are very lo-fi and incredibly funny, I think that's a good source for comedians of the future and writer performers of the future. It's a thing that I, showing my age, absolutely know I would have hated if I was still employed at a site that was designed to create comedy videos. But I still laugh at what all those folks are doing. Like, they're doing legit good comedy skits in 2.5 minutes with just their iPhone and Twitter's limitations.
Maybe as a show like I Think You Should Leave continues to have success, people will remember that they do like that sort of strange, weird comedy.
Yeah.
And where people are trying brand new things. And they'll be like, oh, we have an appetite for this. And then they'll actually go seek it out on the internet, which is like the way it happened the first time, was people were actually going and seeking it out. And then it was kind of served up on a plate through social media accounts. And then people stopped seeking it out. And then all these companies lost a bunch of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I actually do have a quick question for you about crack.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Dan, quick question.
Shoot.
Okay. Is there anything that you did at Cracked? It's been a while now. Let's see. Well, you quit in... Remind me when you quit.
That's honestly very rude.
Okay. So we left Cracked about...
December 4th, 2017.
D-Day. We left Cracked a few years ago. And certainly the cultural landscape has changed. Is there anything that you remember at Cracked doing that you now regret?
Oh, certainly. So many things. I think in the way that like anyone regrets things that they do when they're 21 and 22 years old, I have regrets. I just did it on a very public platform because I was tasked with writing articles about what I thought about the world at 21 and 22. So like, I regret a lot of the opinions that I had as I'm writing a column. I was like, here's what I've learned as a 21-year-old. I was like, no, you're an idiot.
Now that I've crossed the finish line, here's what I can offer as advice.
But broadly speaking, a thing that I regret was in the very early times of writing like columns at Cracked and trying to figure out what I could bring to the table, like a personality that I could lead with. I out the gate tried to pull off like a hyper-masculine, belligerent agent of chaos, really. Cause I'm 21 or 22 when I'm writing these columns, and I think what's going to make a big splash, what's going to get me a lot of attention, and what is a voice that the site is lacking right now, because the site was very much catering to comedy fans, but also like thoughtful, optimistic, intellectual folks. And I was like, let me introduce an element of like frat culture with nerd sensibilities. Let me throw that kind of nonsense in there. Where it was like, this is a guy who likes Spider-Man, but is also like passed out drunk in the middle of the day at a fucking Arby's or whatever, which was things that I was not doing, but it just was interesting to me to be this thing because I thought it would stand out from the crowd of like, you know, I'm writing alongside historians and scientists. So I'm like, I got to do something. So like, what if this is a guy who, what if the character of D.O.B. was this deranged, belligerent person? Let me try to do that. And, you know, not to toot my own horn, it worked. I did get a bunch of fans from doing that, but like it's based on a foundation that I don't believe in. And there's a very clear immediate shift in my writing persona when I got just a little bit older and was like, oh, it's a character who gets drunk all the time and doesn't acknowledge the children that he definitely fathered and is doing drugs at work is not funny. It's not interesting. And I don't like the fans that I've gotten who support that person as a hero. There's a shift from that to me being, hey, I'm going to be honest now. Like, I'm awkward and I don't like getting massages and I don't like getting my teeth checked at the dentist. And I don't like getting haircuts because I don't want anyone touching me or being near me. Like, those are the two phases of my time writing at Cracked, was this very bizarre uber male character and this much closer to my heart, nervous guy with anxiety disorders character.
Yeah.
And I would like the first part of that completely stripped from history.
My brief time as.
Yeah, there's my brief time as, where I inserted myself in famous pieces of pop culture as a horrible, sexist, sometimes racist character, because I thought it would be funny to do that because I was fucking stupid. And that there's a period where I tried to pick a very public fight with Miley Cyrus, and like I can half defend it because the joke was always on the person writing it. The joke was always on me as a person who thought Miley Cyrus would think of us as equals because she was such a superstar. But as much as I can intellectually defend it, you know, I'm still reading words that were written by me where I'm screaming at a 16-year-old and like calling out for fights with her. And I was like, oh, that's not good. I don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah, mine's not too far afield from that. I think we were all kind of doing the same thing. As much as we all thought we were doing something different, we weren't really. Like, my greatest regret at Cracked was that I was contributing to like a damaging and unachievable ideal of what masculinity is. Not in terms of what, it's so hard because your name is on it, but that's not who any of us were. Like, my character in After Hours, for instance, or my character that I would write as for my column, was somebody who, it was a very damaging idea of masculinity, and one that's completely unachievable, but it felt real. I think from the outside, it was like you and your everyday life never feel it's like a human Instagram, basically. Like you don't feel like you measure up generally. I think nobody does. Nobody feels like they do. And after a while, you start to realize, you catch on that everyone's mask is slipping, that nobody actually feels that way. That nobody actually thinks that they've got it exactly right. And I thought how funny it would be to have a character who just did.
Yeah.
Like everything was, he was Ferris Bueller, basically. And everything worked out. And he had no context for suffering. Like the idea of wishing for something was completely foreign to him because he had everything.
Right.
And that was a really fun role to play, but it also, it was, I think that when we'd meet people at conventions and stuff, they'd be like trying to figure out where I separate from the character. And I could tell that some people, like, I just make people feel bad about themselves. And I really regret that.
Yeah.
Cause you don't want to see that. You don't want to see that there is somebody who's getting it right and it's easy because that the person doesn't exist. But when you feel like that it might, then you're like, okay, it's much further of a distance for me to swim to the normal side than I thought.
Right. It's a very strange situation where you're writing a thing, assuming that everyone is on the same page that you're on. You're assuming that they know that the joke is on you, or that the idea of this character who thinks he has everything figured out is funny. And when they don't, either because they identify with the character, which is terrifying, or they think the character is really you and it makes them feel worse about themselves, which is tragic, then it's like, oh, well, then never mind. Then scrape everything. Like, like your intention was not to embolden shitheads or upset sensitive folks. And when you see either of those things happening, it's very sad.
It's really awful. I guess that's just like maybe also maybe the curse of satire. You see a lot of people who agree with the sentiment in the satire, which is the sentiment that you're obviously making fun of if you're doing satire. And you feel like suddenly they see you as a teammate and you're like, oh, no, no. Oh, right. What have I done? Like, I shouldn't be doing anything. This is a bad idea. And yeah, we were all unreliable narrators. We were all people who shouldn't be trusted. And that was the point.
Yeah.
And when I found out that people didn't necessarily get that, or that they were trying to emulate who you were within your persona, it was like, it felt really dirty.
Yeah. Yeah. Years of writing about being an asshole and then reading comments of people who were like, yeah, fuck yeah, this is me too. I want to be like, oh no, never mind. I wasn't writing this for you. Like, the only way that I can write something right now that is like funny and resonant is because I stayed inside reading and writing my whole life. I'm like clearly not this person because I chose this other path.
Yeah. I have another thing that I regret it cracked, which is way more pedantic and probably a little bit more lighthearted.
Okay.
And that's that in the way that we would write articles about things you never noticed in movies, or basically holding up a college essay and tracing it over any piece of pop culture and being like, look, it applies here. I hate that culture has done the same thing and has approached every piece of media with an analytical eye of a professor.
Uh-huh.
I really hate that.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think we didn't start it, but we contributed to it. Yeah, we certainly contributed to it. And like, you're applying like a college literary close reading approach to Ferris Bueller or whatever, and you're trying to like find something new with it and then write an article about that. And now I'll see a Reddit post that is like, look at the characters from The Breakfast Club. The uptight person is wearing like this very proper outfit, and the slacker is wearing this thing where like her hair is messy. Like, they're acting like they're noticing something that was just like, no, that's
the point.
That's the point. Like, they did it on purpose. You didn't notice like a wacky thing that you only could have noticed by applying close reading or anything. You're just like, you're literally just describing the subtext of a thing, which I don't want to think is part of our legacy. But it might be.
I think we're partially responsible for that. I think that there are people who saw After Hours or read the articles on Cracked, and when they were like, ah, yes, that does seem like a fun game to play. I want to play it too. And then did it in a way that was really much more mean-spirited. Whereas I was always sort of striving towards, like, if you find something in a piece of pop culture that seems weird and out of place in a movie or whatever it is, instead of just being like, aha, look at that hole. Look, it's wrong right there. You take it a step further and be like, okay, well, let's assume that that weird thing is intentional. How does it make the piece better?
Right.
And like, it's not an easy thing to do. It's very complicated. But I think a lot of people stop at just the, look at that weird thing. Look at all these plot holes.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? Look at the plot holes in this.
Right. There's been such a confusion over plot holes where sometimes it's just like, no, this character didn't remember that thing because it works for the plot. It's not a mistake.
Yeah.
But we should close out our Cracked stuff. I mean,
yeah, this has been a nice ball washing session, Dan.
Yeah.
I wonder if anyone will actually listen to this.
Best of luck to the people who are still at Cracked, who are still working hard. Syriac Lamar and Alex Schmidt and Logan Trent. And Soren, do you know other names that I don't know? I know there are a ton of freelance writers who are good.
Isaac Cabe.
Isaac and Adam Weirs. Best of luck to all them. Thank you, audience, for supporting us for our time at Cracked, because the ending was not great. It wasn't a perfect dismount, but I'm still very thankful that I got 10 years to learn how to do what I'm doing today and make so many great friends.
Right. We talked a little bit about like being 22 and talking about having already crossed the finish line, being like, this is what I learned in my life. We do the same shit right now. We do the same thing on the podcast. Like it has the feeling of a victory lap. And in 2 years, I'm going to be working a chainsaw in Colorado.
Yeah.
And you're going to be back in Jersey.
Yeah. And 2 years from now, when I'm back in Jersey, you know, fingers crossed, manager at the TGI Fridays on Route 35, we'll still be doing this podcast.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to stop doing it just because now both of us work at a Red Robin.
Yeah. You still want our advice, right, everybody?
Let me tell you how to make ranch in bulk. What you're going to need is a cauldron first.
It would also be irresponsible to not shout out the people who have left Cracked under good and not good circumstances who are still working right now. You can support folks at Gamefully Unemployed. It's Tom Ryman, David Bell, and others.
And that's it.
Folks at Small Beans. That's Tom and David. Show up there every once in a while. Also, Michael Swaim, Abe Epperson, Adam Ganser, Katie Stoll, Bridget Greenberg. You can also support Unpopular Opinion. That's Adam Todd Brown's network. 1-900-HOT-DOG is the recently launched Patreon website from Robert Brockway and Sean Baby. And
the Daily Zeitgeist, that's Jack O'Brien. And he's got a whole network as well that's got... Katie Golden has a creature show.
Oh, that's right.
And
Creature Feature.
And of course, Robert Evans.
Worst Year Ever, which is Robert Evans, Katie Stoll, Cody Johnston. And Robert Evans has Behind the Bastards. Have you done that yet?
No.
Has he not asked you to do that?
No.
Oh, man. Hey, Gabe, can you strike that? We don't want to support Jack or Robert Evans anymore because he hasn't reached out to Soren. Thank you.
Little hurtful.
In the meantime,
I'm not going to reach out to him. I'd feel silly.
No, you shouldn't. He should absolutely. I've done his show fucking 3 times. It's insane that he hasn't reached out to you.
That's crazy. You don't even live here.
No.
Why is he not?
And I'm like for the bastards. He had me talk about Jeffrey Epstein for 3 episodes, and I'm like,
not a bad guy.
I'll listen.
Go ahead and try and change my mind.
All right, but I think it's time to get out of here. I need to track down all the social accounts, but before I do that, just like a public service announcement, the last few months have obviously been dominated by news of the coronavirus, otherwise known as COVID-19, a deadly viral disease that is spreading all over the world. There are a lot of things that we can do in terms of protecting ourselves and the more vulnerable people around us, and it starts with washing your hands often and going to the CDC's website, as they will be regularly updating their coverage of the coronavirus with new information and tips. Get a flu shot. Avoid touching your face. Don't hoard masks. Also, you'll need to exercise some level of common sense and judgment, as there's a lot of dangerous misinformation being spread around the internet and certain news channels. This also might not be one of those cases where one authoritative adult is just going to tell you what to do or how scared to be, as comforting as that thought might be. You may have to be your own adult. Thoughtful, focused, cautious, and responsible. It's scary, but you can do it. My question for Soren, which incidentally is unrelated, is how much money did you make last year?
Fuck, man. I was like cooking up some coronavirus shit, thinking I can weasel out of this. Dan's going to try and make me look like a racist. I can get out of this.
Clock's ticking.
So, I made some money at the job that I do, and it's fuck, Dan.
I mean, it's got to be real or funny.
I know. That's the problem. I'll tell you this. I paid in taxes enough to buy a modest compact car.
Sounds great. Ask him for more details on Twitter at Soren_LTD, or you can ask me questions at dob_inc. You can email the show at qqwithsoren and Daniel@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at twitter.com/qq_soren and Dan. You can find and hire our amazing engineer, producer, editor, Gabe at gabeharder.com. We also have a Patreon, which Soren, hit him again.
It's Patreon/QQ. Nope, that's not right. Patreon/quickquestion.com, I think.
One day we'll get this right.
I'll look it up for next time.
Do you have anything else to say while we're riding out?
No, bye.
Okay, bye.